Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Welcome to our hosts, Susan Franzen, Greta Anderson, and Paul Wearson. Why so many co-hosts, Susan?
Because last week was a lovely time to take road trips, a little windy, and we need to enjoy those sunny days while we can.
Yeah, I was really glad to take advantage of those beautiful days last week. And this week with you, Susan, it's time to take a little weather was drawing us out of our normal routines, but unfortunately it's not going to be so nice today, so we'll have to just slog along. Rain and some snow are predicted for the rest of the week and the weekend, except for Veterans Day, which is supposed to be super windy, but at least nothing like a derecho.
Recovering from the derecho was what inspired my first road trip this fall to the Iowa Arboretum. Gina was here during that time, so she and I went out to the Arboretum on a beautiful but blustery day last week. Mark Schneider, the director, was there to describe what they had been doing to restore the garden and make use of the fallen trees. Let's listen in.
The derecho hit us on August 10th, 2020, and in a 45-minute period, we lost over 350 trees on the main grounds and probably even more than that on our trail system. And over the last year, our volunteers and staff have been busy cleaning up the grounds because we had debris all over the place. We also hired some professionals to come in and help us with the cleanup effort. And we planted our first tree on April 29th here at the Arboretum post-derecho. And it was a ginkgo tree. And it was from a seed from a tree that came from Hiroshima. So it was a survivor seed and tree that we grew, and it really spoke to what the Arboretum is about, the Iowa Arboretum and Gardens is about, which is that we survived this, and this is just part of our history. It isn't what defines us as an organization. And over the last year, not only did we clean up the grounds, but we received a lot of good donations to the Arboretum for our relief fund. And that has allowed us to start planting trees, realizing that these trees will most likely be enjoyed by future generations, but we have to be the stewards of our arboretum and to plant more trees. So this year, we planted 115 new trees. So we lost 150 on the main grounds. We planted 115 new trees. We planted about 150 new shrubs. We planted over 500 new perennials. We created two new gardens out here at the Arboretum. And we overhauled our tea house garden, which is really a magnificent garden, a great place to go and sit on the grounds. So we cleaned up. We focused on how we restore the grounds. And now the grounds are on their way to being restored and planted. And you know, during the pandemic, we realized people are looking for places like the Iowa Arboretum. You know, they're looking for places that they can get outside, to be with nature, connect with nature. And during the pandemic, we closed for 2 months to figure out how we were going to open back up. And we opened up in May of 2020 after closing in March of 2020. And the next 3 months, our visitation jumped 39%. And I know that other public gardens and also other parks and state parks really did see a jump in the visitation, and realizing that people, you know, it's nature therapy. People find a place like the Iowa Arboretum and Gardens and other places to get outdoors and to enjoy nature. And to learn about plants, such as trees and shrubs and other plants.
So do you have a whole crew of volunteers that do a lot of your planting? Or or do you have like a staff that it's probably a combination? And where do you get all your, what you're going to plant? Where are all your seedlings and things from?
Well, very good questions. So we have a tremendous group of volunteers that come here usually on Tuesdays and Thursdays, but they come anytime to help us maintain the grounds. They also help out with special events and in our gift shop and in other areas. So they're a wonderful group of people doing great things for the Iowa Arboretum. And they come from all over, from Story County, from Boone County, and other counties. They come here because they see the value in the Arboretum. They can see the tangible results of the work that they do. And they like working here. They like the people that are here. So that's really good. And we like them. We have a very small staff. So we have a curator of collections, and that's Tyler Johnson. And then we have a horticulturalist, which is Kevin Lance. And they take care of managing and working on the grounds. And then you asked me about where we get our plants. So we get them from all over. We try to find things that are locally sourced as well as things that are interesting and unusual and things that, you know, people might want to grow in their yards. One of the things we looked at, because we have a collections committee here at the Arboretum, is we looked at, you know, are there places that we should be or things that we should be planting that connect with homeowners, universities and colleges that are studying plants. So we've looked at that and created lists, and hopefully we can be a resource for schools and things like that that, you know, are interested in learning about specific plants. So we obtain their list of plants that they're studying and are trying to fill in some of those things. So we want to, our mission is about education, so our collection can help people learn about different types of plants. But to your original question, plants come from all over. They come from the Midwest. Sometimes they come from the West Coast. Usually don't try to go too far south just because of their ability to acclimate to our conditions here in Iowa.
I know you have different areas of your plants. Do you have any areas of like edible plants and, you know, different themes? Or is everything kind of all mixed together?
So the original Arboretum, which was established in 1968, and we're a 501c3 nonprofit organization. So we were established, we're a grassroots organization started by volunteers as part of the Iowa State Horticultural Society. And our philosophy back then was to establish collections of plants, to have different collections of plants throughout the garden. But now our philosophy has kind of shifted. Even with the derecho, we've shifted our philosophy to put in more gardens that reflect what people could do in their own home. So instead of having a, say, a nut tree or a large medium deciduous tree collection, we're incorporating medium deciduous trees within garden spaces with perennials and shrubs and annuals and all those types of things. So the homeowner can see that in a setting that maybe they could take back and grab some ideas from their visit to the Arboretum. So a little bit different philosophy, still collecting plants, but in a different way and displaying them a little bit differently. We still have our collections. Like we have our nut tree collection and we have our governor's oak collections, but it seems if we diversify our presentation, better way to display plants. And as far as edible plants, we do have a small garden in our children's garden that would display things that people could grow at home that are edible. Obviously, a nut tree collection would have nuts that people could grow for eating at some point. But those are some of the things that we have on the grounds.
As we walked in, I noticed near the building that we're in, there was a row of large deciduous trees. And I was, you know, wondering, are we going to have piles of leaves coming down? And it looked like in that area you maybe could. Were these some of the ones that survived?
They are. So there were some trees that did very well during the derecho and some that did not. But the trees that you're seeing on the grounds are survivor trees also. They were able to survive the storm for whatever reason, and we've saved them. And now they're starting to shed their leaves. So, yes.
And when people come out here, what do they do? What can they do? Just walk around and see the trees, or are there paths? Is there like a little map that they can go with, or should they come inside first?
Well, we do have a visitor center, so usually people come into the visitor center first. We have a wonderful gift shop, a beautiful building that people can come in and meet and talk to our staff or volunteers before they go out on the grounds. And we have a site map, a grounds map that they can follow as they walk around the grounds and look at different collections and gardens. They can also walk across the street to our Woodland Trails area. Beautiful, quiet, peaceful trails. And we also have a prairie that people can walk through, has trail system through our prairie area. So those are nice things. We are dog friendly, so we encourage people to come out with their dogs. Or as we say here, we encourage dogs to bring their people out and walk our trails. All we ask is that they are leashed and that they pick up after themselves. But it's a great place to come outdoors and to walk and, again, connect with nature.
And on all these trails, are there like little benches or picnic tables or anything for people? You know, some people are older or whatever, if they're walking along, to sit down and rest a bit?
So for our main campus, we have 24 benches out on the grounds during from April through the end of October, because that's when our grounds are mainly open during the week and then on the weekends. So when the derecho hit, we're a little bit overwhelmed because we had all of these trees laying on the ground. So eventually we figured out that maybe we should see if there were some wood turners or people that work with wood that might be interested in some interesting and unusual wood. So we gave wood away to wood some of those people. We even had a person that was going to take some of the wood and repurpose it and then give it back to us. And some of these people that took wood said that they would give us back pieces that we could auction off later on to make some good out of something that was bad or not great. So we tried not to waste any of it. All the trees were grounded up into mulch. So as you walk around, we still have some very large mulch piles, and that's from the 350 trees that were destroyed here on the main grounds. But we plan to use that mulch. We're spreading it now. And we had a local woodworker donate about 25 to 30 wood-turned bowls and other items, and they're for sale out in our gift shop. And he said, just, you know, to help you as a nonprofit, he just gave it to us, and we have them available out there, and they're beautiful.
After the derecho, I remember when I had talked to you, and it was pretty grim. About a month later, I went to your website, and it's when I realized how much work had been done, because if you didn't know where all those big trees were, it looked like a lovely garden.
So from the derecho, there were some things that did well. So our dwarf conifer collection, or our conifer collection, fared pretty well. There were certain things like white pines that had the tops broken out of them, and we had to take them down to the ground. But that one area that you're talking about, which kind of greets you when you come to the Arboretum, did very well. I think we had one plant that was leaning over, and then we had a few broken branches.
So how about throughout the winter? Can people still come out and walk around and see the trees, even though there's not a whole lot of leaves to see?
They can. We're open during the week, Monday through Friday, so it's a nice time to come out if you want to walk the grounds and walk our trails. So on the weekends, we're closed just because we're not seeing that much traffic at that time of year. And then we open up on the weekends starting April 1st. And our trails are open in the wintertime if people want to walk our trails. and we encourage people to have memberships to go ahead and walk our trails. And that helps us maintain our trails during the year.
Thank you so much, and I hope everybody comes out to the Arboretum. It's located
1875 Peach Avenue in Madrid.
The falling leaves drift by the window. The autumn leaves of red and gold. I see your lips, the summer kisses, the sunburned hands I used to hold. Since you went away, the days grow long, and soon I'll hear old winter's song. But I miss you most of all, my darling. When autumn leaves start to fall,
in case you just tuned in, Greta Anderson and I have invited you along on a road trip to the Iowa Arboretum, where she was not the interviewer, my usual host, Gina McAndrews was, but Gina couldn't be here this morning. So we continued the trip with Greta Anderson.
I just have to jump in, Susan, and say that I visited the Iowa Arboretum last month and had a delightful time. I was so glad to hear some more details about the place from this interview.
Thank you. We always have these lovely surprises. I mean, our hosts often have unexpected activities that fit right in with our program.
I'm definitely going to plan to go there during iris season. They have an amazing collection of iris. Of course, they weren't in bloom when I saw them. Not much was, but I could not believe how many iris they have and so many different varieties. I think they coordinate with some group that breeds them and so forth. So,
well, thank you. So, well, it's so good to have you here to continue our road trip. As you probably know, there has been an unusual amount of news about the revival of small towns since the pandemic. For instance, in the last month, the Des Moines Register had two articles about Jewell, population 1,216, featuring the bistro being started by a woman who had resettled to Jewell from New York City. And she gave a great plug for the city about how great the little two-block Main Street was and how it was going to be a shopping destination. And there was another one yesterday lauding the town as a fashionable shopping destination, a Main Street town. The articles in the Register didn't mention the grocery store, but I knew that it had closed and then reopened because of local people. I called the manager who told me this story. Here is Garen Zanker.
It was the previous owner. He decided to close the doors on January 1st. So that would have been of 19. So from right after he closed it, we knew that it was going to happen, and we formed a board right after that. And I was working somewhere else at that time, and there's five of us that kind of came together and got the you know, made sure that the town was behind it, because it wasn't going to do any good for us to do all the work if no one was going to support it. So we kind of laid out a plan of what we're going to do to bring the store back and get somebody to run it. So by July, we had raised enough money through donations and people buying shares to make repairs and build the inventory back up to be open. And in that time, I decided I left my job that I was at and came back to work and manage this.
Well, sounds like it's really going well.
Uh-huh. Yep. So I think part of including everybody in the community from the beginning so that they knew what was going on, and they kind of felt like they had a part of it, and they saw the progress of it going from being closed, and they saw what a need it filled. You know, everyone doesn't buy all their groceries here, but if it's here for them to save a trip to go into Ames or go to Webster City to buy all their groceries, where they could at least come in here and just get a few things, and we've just kind of built on that.
Yeah, well, I guess that having them have shares gives them an additional incentive.
Yep. So, and I think a lot of people, it wasn't so much, and we told them this up front, it wasn't about buying a share that, so that, you know, they aren't going to make $1 million dividend off of it. It was to just kind of, you're putting forth an investment, so maybe their neighbor that can't drive out of town had somewhere to get groceries that was easy for them.
Well, I have sort of a side question. When we were much younger, we used to go up to Little Wall Lake, and this is before it had the campground. So I was really impressed to see the campground. And also I've been impressed with the Hamilton County Rangers, or the people who...
Oh, the DNR.
The DNR.
Yeah.
And what they are doing, for, like the things they did for the campers on Halloween. And I wondered if you get business from, at least during the summer season.
Oh, yeah. I think that's just part of it, is that knowing that people are coming here and they've come out to camp, and, you know, if that saves them a trip to go, you know, if they forgot something, if they just need something for supper real quick, they can come into town. And hopefully the idea is that once they're in here, we've impressed them with a nice clean store with some good variety, that either they go back to the campground and told everyone what they saw when they came in the store, or next time they come camping, they know that they can come in here and get what they need.
And so do you have people coming from outside Jewell?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'd like to think that we're taking care of the whole South Hamilton community, you know, Jewell, Ellsworth, Stanhope, Randall, and Camerar, and Radcliffe. And now, since Story City doesn't have a grocery store, we've kind of reached out, and we do deliveries on Wednesdays to people that can't get out. Yeah, so we're doing that service for them.
So, had you been in the grocery business before?
Well, this was my first job when I was 15, and the person two owners ago, he hired me when I was 15. So, as I went through high school, I worked here, and even when I went to Iowa State, I'd come back and work on, you know, holidays and stuff. After college, I went and worked at Fairway for 19 years and made a good career of that, and then found myself working at Hy-Vee for another 4 years after that, and then my brother opened the locker in Stanhope, so I stopped working at Hy-Vee and went to help him run the locker for a little bit, and went to work at a bank in Boone, and that was when this all happened. So I left the job at the bank to come run the grocery store.
Well, it sounds like you've had a lot of great experience.
Yeah. So, yeah, those lessons I learned from all the bigger stores, I can kind of apply here, and, you know, kind of giving people variety and kind of product knowledge and trying to help people get what they need. And I try to squeeze as much as I can into this little tiny store.
Where do you get your groceries from?
It's through AWG. It'd be the same company that does like Price Chopper and Cash Saver in Des Moines.
Is it a co-op?
No, they're a wholesale grocer. So
okay, wholesale.
We buy from them, and they're out of Kansas City.
And what was the other Price Chopper, and what's the other one?
Cash Saver. I think that's what it is.
Okay.
Cash Saver in Des Moines. Price Chopper and Cash Saver, yeah.
Well, it sounds like you have really set things up well.
So I just need to look, a lot of these people I grew up with, or they're my friends' parents, or they're, you know, I have four kids that are going to school here. So it's their parents and classmates. So I just, there's a lot of community here, and I just feel like it's a good way to be involved and take care of everybody. You give them a nice place to shop and have them save time.
Well,
just if people know that we're here, just you know, we might not have everything, but if they ask, we can do our hardest to try and get it for them. And I know that some things are kind of hard and difficult to get right now, but there's lots of substitutions and other things we can at least try to make the most of every situation that we have.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Gary.
Yeah. Well, in my spare time, I coach basketball, and last week was a musical for the high school, and I was helping with that. So.
On an evening such as there are moments that come back to me. I go wandering back in time to the prairie of my memory. There's a farmyard light on a summer night, and the radio's on in the barn, and the stars and the moon are dancing, and my daddy is whistling along to a song from the Apri show. And I wanna be there in the warm summer air with the crickets chanting, till the cows come home, till the cows come home. Bring along. On the concrete floor by the milk house door.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and I'm Greta Anderson, one of the co-hosts for today with Susan Franzen. Well, Jewel Grocery sounds like the newest grocery store in this part of central Iowa, but Susan suggested that we follow up with one that has been in business the very longest. Well, no, I can't say that. So we drove down to Town and Country Market in Slater. I had been there a few times before and was remarked upon its fresh produce and all the things that you want in a grocery store, but I had never been to the outdoor section, which still had a few plants out there. It seemed like a lovely little place to purchase your plants and perennials. So anyway, then we went inside.
Yes, and there was Larry, as I think he's always been since I've gone down to, I've interviewed him a couple of times before over the years, and he was still in the back. I think there were more freezers back there than they used to be.
Yeah, they were humming along.
They were humming along.
Full of turkeys.
All right. One of the reasons I wanted to go to the Slater grocery store was that it has been under the same ownership for decades. And for decades, people came from Ames often to buy the potted plants, both annuals and perennials, that were in that outdoor space that Greta mentioned. The owner, Larry Larson, had been in the grocery business long enough to be termed legendary. In fact, when you hear his story, you'll know Larson's West Street Grocery in Ames was there when we came in 1963. So he's
and
been
I'm,
around.
I was so astounded that it's the location of the current Mother's Pub and the former Dugan's Deli and all of the rest.
Yeah, well, Dugan's Deli was a family. The Larsons, I think, decided that a bar in that location would be more profitable than a grocery store, and you'll hear about that. So let's start with Larry's first effort to get a Grouchy sort of started in Huxley when he had to leave Ames.
Became partners in starting a grocery store in the new shopping center at Huxley that was just being built in 1971. We financed it through the Small Business Administration and had a 5-year lease on the building where we established that business, and we were quite successful there. But at the end of the 5-year lease, we were unable to renew our lease and found ourselves in a loan balance to pay off and no place to sell groceries. So the grocery store in Hayter was available for sale at that time. So I made arrangements to purchase the existing store in Slater and moved the remaining stock from the store in Huxley to Slater, and the rest is history, I guess.
So at that point, you did not have a big bank account behind your business.
No, I did not. It was kind of a struggle, but we made it.
So we're here with Larry Larson at Larry's Town and Country Market. This is a substantial grocery for a little town of Slater.
I've been here for 45 years.
And what is the square footage here, just to give people a picture of?
I think it's around 4,000 square feet.
And there's a nice little feature outside. You're selling plants, and you have a greenhouse and a potting shed, it looks like.
Yes, that started in 1997, and it's a vacant lot that we filled up with plants and seasons. We started with rose bushes, and we've evolved mainly annual flowering annuals now.
So you've been in the grocery business a long time, practically your whole life, right?
I started at the B&W grocery store in Hampton, Iowa in 1950. I was 15 years old.
Goodness gracious. Did your parents own that, or did you just decide you wanted to work in a grocery?
My parents did not own it. And I just wanted a job, and my father worked there, and he made it possible for me to get a job there.
I want a little of the story of Larson's West Street Grocery, which was a real staple for us back in the 60s when we moved to Ames.
My parents bought that store in 1952, after we had moved to Ames in 1951. So it was all rather quickly, changed quite quickly in those 2 years. And I worked there from 1952 until 1972, with the exception of 3 years when I spent in the U.S. Army.
Okay, so in two years, you went from being a new hire, age 15, at this small grocery in Hampton, Iowa, you know, being the son of the store owner, grocery store owner at here in Ames, Larson's.
Right.
So it must have been like you and your dad, when you started working in the same place, you started figuring out how things got done and talking about it?
Not really. 16 years old by then, and I didn't have a lot of influence on the operation of the store.
One of the things, though, that was unique for that time, and unique from the grocery stores in Ames, it stayed open until 11.
Yeah.
And of course, it was in campus town, so probably a lot of students went late.
We stayed open so the students could buy beer, basically.
And that's pretty much how that property is still being used, Mother's Pub. So do you have family who are involved in this? You do it for the love of it, am I right?
That's possible. I'm well ingrained habit, and I don't seem to be able to stop.
And you've probably seen, you know, you've seen grocery stores and the business go through a lot of changes, but the concept is so basic. There's like needing to put things that people need close to where they live.
Yes, and you need to be competitive. You need to be there for people, and need to have money in the bank. And that's the downfall of many grocery stores, is they fail to have money in the bank, and that's the end of the line. So you got to keep on top of it.
That's interesting. So you've got to keep your inventory down to the extent that you've got some padding.
Well, I don't know. It's just essential to have a viable working enterprise. You have to put the numbers on paper and see that it can actually operate. I mean, just having the doors open costs a lot of money, whether you're selling anything or not. So
can you tell me when that extra padding that you've had has come in handy? What kept you afloat?
We've done so many remodelings. It's just been nice to be able to pay cash for remodelings. And then, of course, we always then have that opportunity to depreciate those investments over the next 5 or 7 years. We get a tax advantage from that.
You sound pretty savvy.
I learned the hard way. I've never taken a business course in my life. I studied history.
So on the way over here, Susan was telling me that you hired a female butcher and you've had women butchers ever since. Is that true?
For instance, you're probably talking about Mandy. She's been here, what, 20-some years, and she's very good at that. But she's taught a lot of other people to do it, too. It's very, very easy to do it. Typically, it's mostly Slater people. Slater, Sheldon, that's our customer base. Madrid, some.
So do you use the same suppliers as the big guys, or it seems like you might have some extra flexibility because you're so small to buy from local businesses, or do you use the same kind of distributors as everybody else?
I'm a member of the Associated Wholesale Grocers Co-op, and that's the primary supply. Co-op of small grocery stores that belong to this co-op, that's primarily southeast United States, but it goes up into Michigan and Iowa, Wisconsin, it goes down into Texas. They have wholesale warehouses. I buy out of Norfolk, Nebraska. They have Kansas City, Kenosha, Wisconsin, Memphis, Tennessee, but then I'm not sure what's all down south. They have a lot of it. It's in the southern part of the United States. But you buy a membership, and then as a member, then you get dividends for your as a result according to your purchases.
That seems like it would make it possible to do this and compete with the big guys, as long as you've got a good location.
Yeah. It's made it possible so far. Previously, we were with another co-op that went, like I say, now we're with AWG, and that's, I'd say 99% of our purchases come from there or through there. No, we're open till 8 o'clock.
And when do you open?
8 o'clock.
How many people do you employ?
Let's say 15.
Well, since this is approaching Thanksgiving, will you have any turkeys for Thanksgiving?
Freezer's got a stack of turkeys to the ceiling.
What about your baked goods? Do you have any pumpkin pies or the Town and Country Market?
They deliver here twice a week. We have a table out there, and they fill the table twice a week.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
It's always a pleasure to see you.
Good to see you, Susan.
Yes.
We've been around,
yes.
We've been the same places over many years. I hate to date you, but...
1963. No. Just a few weeks before Kennedy was shot. That's the first thing I remember from...
Coming to Ames.
This is a time to check out the local grocery store that didn't survive, and we have with us regular co-host Paul Wilson. Paul, how are things going in Story City?
Well, yeah, glad you asked, Susan. Yeah, this year has been sort of a banner year because our grocery store closed, and I never expected that to happen. We're a town of about 3,000, so I thought sure we could support a grocery store, but problem is that a lot of our people in Story City commute to jobs in Ames, and it really works well for many of them to pick up groceries on the way home from work. And so they might go to Hy-Vee or to Fairway. And, of course, one of the problems with a small operator in a small town is that they can't buy in the same bulk as the major corporations. So it's very hard to be competitive price-wise if you're running a small grocery store in Story City. It's only 10 miles from Ames. Given the traffic pattern, so many of our residents in Story City who work in Ames and commute regularly. So he tried to modify his business. He tried to put in a line of hardware. He also had a deli, so you could have lunch there every day. It was a full-service grocery store with whole meat cutting, the whole produce and meat section and all the things you expect at a grocery store. Well, when the grocery store was running during the pandemic, I really felt fortunate because I didn't want to go down to Ames to the large stores because we were into a lockdown, as you remember, or at least we were instructed to make sure that we didn't go into crowded places and limit our activities. So I felt very good to go up to the Story City grocery store where there were hardly any patrons at the time I was there compared to if I had gone to one of the large stores in Ames. So during the pandemic, I really appreciated the grocery store up here because of that. There might be two or three other people in the whole place when I was up there. So I felt very safe during the depths of the pandemic. And they closed just this past summer. And that's been a real adjustment to everybody, principally to older folks, you know, who have mobility problems or any problems getting out. That was so good for them to be able to go to a grocery store in their own town. And very often, if I was in the grocery store, I would see a person who was older with disabilities with their home health care aid shopping. And so my first concern when the grocery store closed was that these people wouldn't have access to a full service grocery store without going to Ames. And I was glad to hear the guy from Jill say that they're doing some delivery to Story City now. That's really good because a lot of people, especially when the weather becomes inclement and you have winter weather, it's a real issue getting their foodstuffs to their place of residence. They might be living in a condo or an apartment or whatever. But when you look at someone like myself, who's still quite mobile and everything, I look at Story City as a place where I have to sort of combine the three convenience stores to get the groceries I need out here at the farm. And of course, none of those facilities have a full-service grocery store. There's no meat department or meat cutters or anything like that. And very modest produce, if you think about a normal convenience store. We have TriStar, we have Dollar General, Casey's, and Come and Go here, and Yesway. But of course, they're all gas station / convenience stores. They really don't come up to a full-service grocery store. So we really miss that, and I miss it too, because if I'm going to cook a roast or have any meat products, I really have to go to Ames to do that. And I get my canned goods over at Dollar General, then I get something else over at Casey's. And when I think that I could get all that stuff at one location before, I really miss the grocery stores. But, you know, it's just part of the changes that are happening in rural Iowa. You have a lot of infrastructure built in Iowa, including grocery stores, churches, whatever you want to name it, a small town. And that was originally built as infrastructure when there were four families on every section. You know. Well, that's changed. You don't have that density of population. We really hear about that all the time, that rural areas are losing population. So that means that all the infrastructure is that was built to serve a larger number of people is in some sort of decline. So I was really glad to hear your features on Jewel, because that's what small towns need to do in our current environment. They need to reinvent themselves. They need to look at what kinds of retail or businesses they can have in the main street that's maybe lately been kind of vacant. At Story City, we have most of our stores filled, but not a lot of retail. A lot of the downtown office buildings have become offices, or we have antique stores and a couple of boutiques, but compared with the 50s, when it was a real vital retail section, very, very sparse compared to then, but at least we don't have the vacant buildings, you know. But Jewel, Story City, all these towns, they need to be constantly inventive about who they have as businesses on Main Street and what kind of concepts they're trying to develop and to reinvent themselves. But we have a peculiar situation in Story City when I look at the prospects for a new grocery store like they did as a community in Jewel, because we are so close to Ames. Jewel is 20 miles away, and so that gives them some leeway to not be so damaged by the big stores in Ames. But I think that I can't say there's a prospect for a full-service grocery store in Story City. Maybe things will surprise me, and we'll end up with another full-service grocery store. But I certainly miss it, and I certainly was disappointed when it happened. And I'm glad to hear about things Jewel, where they got together and put that business back together. And, of course, the guy is Slater. He's just an old hand at this. Very, very hard to defeat somebody with that kind of street cred, you know. But,
and thanks for keeping us up on the other side of the story, when people don't care enough about a grocery store to put their money in it.
Before we close out the show, we have some important announcements about Worldly Goods and Benefit Shopping. Today, November 10th, is the day that KHOI was to be the beneficiary of Benefit Shopping. 10 to 15% of any purchases made from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. or online will go to KHOI if you indicate that you wish to benefit that organization. Here is the list of other organizations who have benefit shopping days. November 11th, the American Association of University Women. November 17th, Raising Readers. November 18th, League of Women Voters. November 30th, Ames Children's Choir. December 2nd, Prairie Flower Children's Center. December 4th and 5th, St. Thomas Aquinas.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen, with co-hosts Gina McAndrews, Greta Anderson, and Paul Wearson.
Special thanks to our interim station manager, Michael Murphy, for engineering today's program, and to producer Lynn Carey for all her assistance. Also, KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The view of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI, your community nonprofit, partisan media. Remember that you can also hear today's program online at khoifm.org and find links to our guests and information you heard during this program. Our website is khoifm.org. Please consider becoming a member and making KHOI your community radio station with your financial support. Go to our website at khoifm.org and press the yellow donate button to begin the process of becoming a member.
Guests on today's program were Mark Schneider, director of the Iowa Arboretum, Larry Larson, owner of Town and Country Market in Slater, and Garen Zank, manager of the Jewel Market. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. At noon, you can hear a replay of Monday's Capital Week. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thanks you for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Dennis Hart.
I'm Laura Bellin.
We'd like to invite you to join us for KHOI Radio's Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything that's going on under Iowa's Golden Dome.
Each week, we'll talk about what the governor and legislature are doing, both in public and behind closed doors, that affect Iowans' lives.
So please make it a date. Join us on Capital Week, Monday nights live at 7. And if you can't make it then, catch the replay Wednesday at noon.
Right here on KHOI Community Radio.
KHOI and CY Stevens Auditorium present an evening of Susan Werner on the big stage at CY Stevens. Discounted tickets, which include a contribution to KHOI, are available at khoifm.org. She recently tweeted out that Stevens Auditorium is an Iowa Farm Girls Carnegie Hall. Susan Werner is a composer of Broadway-bound Bull Durham, the musical. The concert is on November 21st at 7 p.m., but discounted tickets, including a donation to KHOI, are still available at khoifm.org.
And the radio's on in the barn, and the stars and the moon are dancing. And my daddy is whistling along to a song from the Apri show. And I wanna be there in the warm summer air with the crickets chanting. Till the cows come home. Till the cows come home. Whispering words, and the cats are waiting for a spell on the concrete floor by the milk house door. And the radio's on in the barn, and the stars and the moon are dancing, and my daddy is a whistling along to a song from the opera. My daddy is a whistling along to a song from the Opry.